Faith practices are repeated actions that help us grow in our love for God and our neighbor, listen to the Holy Spirit, and become more like Jesus. And they're for ordinary people of all ages, no matter where they are in their faith journey. If you're longing for a deeper, more life-giving faith, you're going to love listening to the conversations in this series. Each guest shared stories of how their faith is being shaped through a particular faith practice, along with an idea that you can try at home. Join us on the bench as we wonder about the faith practices. Open to Wonder starts now.
Heidi DeYoung began keeping a diary when she was just 9 years old. And unlike some of us whose diaries will never see the light of day, Heidi regularly reads excerpts of her diaries to her three daughters. I know, right? It's a practice she describes as equal parts embarrassing and glorious. And it's one of several ways that Heidi is intentional about remembering the goodness of God in her life and in the life of her family. Heidi has been an ordained minister in the Christian Reformed Church for 17 years. She began her ministry as the pastor for discernment at Calvin Theological Seminary, and then she served two CRC congregations, one in West Michigan and one in Eastern Ontario. She's currently working as a chaplain in long-term care and as a restorative practitioner with Faith Care. Heidi has a doctorate in ministry from Western Theological Seminary, and she and her husband Tim have three daughters and a beloved Husky lab mix. And Chris and I can't wait for you to hear our conversation with Heidi so you can hear all about how her family marks baptism birthdays with cupcakes, creeds, and a reminder of God's love. And you can hear what she has to say about the importance of holding difficult memories and, of course, those diaries. Heidi, Chris, and I are thrilled that you said yes to sitting down with us today. And we're just really excited to talk to you about the faith practice of remembering. As Chris and I thought about remembering, we thought about all the different kind of associations that we tend to have with a word like that. As we mentioned in the introduction, you're currently working as a chaplain in a long-term care home, which I would imagine is a context where the idea of remembering and perhaps not always remembering comes up a lot. We also, when we think of the word remember, we often also hear it in the context of a command to do something, right? For example, a parent or a teacher telling a child or a student, don't forget this, don't forget this important thing. But when we think of remembering as a faith practice, it feels a little different. And maybe a little less like a command, maybe more invitational. So we'd love to hear your take on remembering as a faith practice. How would you describe it? What do you think of it as?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to talk about this. When I was asked, I thought about it for maybe 2 seconds and thought, of course, remembering is such a central aspect to who I am and how I practice my faith. So thank you for the opportunity to reflect on this. You know, in the last several months, I picked up a book that I feel like if I could just make a recommendation right off the front of a book that has been so helpful to me in crystallizing some of my thoughts about this, it is Jamie Smith's book, How to Inhabit Time. Because I think remembering is a subset of an overarching practice of being present in the time that we are in right now. And it includes not only looking back, but also looking ahead and being present to this present, being present to our past, and being present to our future. And that overarching practice, another way to talk about that is the practice of discernment. And my first job was as a pastor for discernment at Calvin Theological Seminary. And so, you know, I'm in my 20s, and that's what I was tasked to do, is to help people in the practice of discerning really their futures. Like, I was the chaplain for Calvin Seminary's program called Facing Your Future at that time. It's changed name since then. And so it was a very future-oriented practice. But when you do discernment well, you are also incorporating looking at your past and your history. I remember at a retreat that we had on discerning your calling, we did this collaborative art piece where people, I think it even still hangs in Calvin Seminary, unless they've taken it down. They've done so much remodeling since I've been there, but the participants were supposed to write and or draw on different color pieces of paper, something from their past that shaped them, was formative for them. And then also something like the question was, of all of the things that the world needs most, you know, or of all the things Jesus could do for the world, what does the world need most? And they all had their different answers. And Joel Skoontanis was putting this all together in this beautiful piece of art where their histories, their things in their past made up the roots of the tree. And then their visions for the future made up the leaves of the tree. And we talked about that, about being present to our life, looking at our histories and how that shapes how we move forward. And Jamie Smith's book is just brilliant in helping us to be present to our present, our future, and of course our past and how that shapes us. So keeping our histories always before us, I think, is part of what it means to engage the practice of remembering. And that, I mean, that can be pretty informal, you know, but I do think that there's something about intentionally honoring and marking milestones in our lives, of what's going on, so that later we can look back. I mean, you think of the stones that, you know, the Israelites were to collect to help them to remember their history and God's salvation. And that shape that helps us to consolidate our identity, and it helps us to navigate our future because we know who we are and we know where we've come from. So when I think of the spiritual practice of remembering, I think of intentional marking of time, often in community, so that we can remember who we are as we move forward into the future.
That's awesome. That's so helpful. I'm going to jump on one thing you said. You mentioned this idea of looking back and, you know, looking back at what shaped us. You wrote this great post in the Reformed Journal online, and we will link to that in our show notes. And for those who haven't read Heidi's work in the Reformed Journal online, you must, because it's amazing. But one particular post that really resonated with me as also a girl mom, I know you have, I think, three, I have four. You described in a post called Overstoried, reading your childhood diary entries to your fourth and fifth grade daughters. And like, props to you, because as someone who's, you know, destroyed her diaries, lest anyone read them. But I think that must have been such a powerful and encouraging for them act of remembering. So, you know, tell us more about that, because I think that's really intriguing and significant.
Yeah. I mean, that post is from several years ago, and I am still doing this. So I started keeping a daily diary when I was 9, and I stopped when I was about 30, but then I picked it up again a couple of years ago, because that's been such an anchoring practice for me. So I do think that having a diary or a journal is actually part of my discipline of remembering. It's marking things down. It's keeping track. So I have three daughters, and they are now 16, 14, and 11. And so all three of them, my oldest, we have a lot of catching up to do, but my middle and my youngest, and especially with my youngest, it's a daily practice. It's a daily practice of mom reading my diary from when I was her age on this date. And it is, I think probably in that overstoried post, I made reference to, like, I had written in the margin something about, like, a note to my future daughter, thinking I might have one. And I'd said something like, you know, something I was talking about a cute boy, and it's like, oh, you know, honey, if you're reading this, you know, let me, we can go find a picture of him. And I can't actually find a picture of him. This guy has disappeared. He's not on socials. I don't know where he is. But anyway, so we had been so excited about seeing that marginalia. So they love it. They love it. So my middle daughter is now in her first relationship. And when I was her age, I was dating a lot of boys. So they get to see what mom was like.
Yes.
And I get to be so impressed that my daughters are so much more mature than I was when I was their age. And
and that you're okay. Like, I think that really struck me. I thought, wow, how helpful to see what mom was like, for you to remember also. So as a parent, that you're remembering, this is what it was like to be 9 or 12 or 16. I'd forgotten. And mm-hmm. also that they see mom went through some of this in a different time, in a different way, but she survived. And I'm guessing a theme of God's faithfulness then just runs through that.
Absolutely. It is equal parts embarrassing and glorious. It is such a great, and also, I mean, to just bookend this, my mom started a daily diary when she was 13. And a couple years ago, my sister and I started reading her diary. She'd had a little bit of time off in her 20s, but for the most part, she kept a daily diary from when she was 13 till a few days before she died when she was 70. And so it is now our daily practice. We use the app Marco Polo, where we send each other video messages every day, where we read on this date we're reading through 6 different years at the same time. And it does the same thing for us. It anchors us. Our history is, you know, our mom has rubbed off on us. We carry our mom with us, and we get to hear her voice every day. And she talks about us, and she, a lot of her entries included prayers. So we get to see her faith formation throughout her life and hear her story and her words, every day. And we love it. We never miss it. We never miss it. And after we read those entries, we say, these are the words of our mama. Blessed be the fruit. And just because the words of our mom are bearing fruit in our lives. So that same image of a tree is really relevant to the loving work that we do of reading her words.
That's so beautiful, Heidi. Thank you for sharing that.
That is an incredible gift, a multi-generational gift that your family has. And it kind of beckons me to say, you know, what are the other gifts of remembering? And mm-hmm. I know you have talked about in some other settings the importance of remembering baptism, mm-hmm. And that you've helped your kids actually remember their baptism, mm-hmm. Which in the Reformed tradition, we always kind of laugh about of which of you kids remember your baptism? And they're all like, oh, I do. And most of them were infants. But you take that seriously. And so I we'd love to hear a little bit more about what that practice of remembering baptism looks like in your family, and how that connects to the bigger story of us being God's people.
Yeah. So I had the wonderful blessing of working, as I mentioned, at Calvin Seminary while I was at the time that I was first having kids. Right. So my first two were born while I worked at Calvin Sem. And David Reilersdam, still one of the professors there, and he was the one who talked about this, I think at a Discerning Your Calling retreat that I had, that I was leading as the pastor for discernment. And he was one of the speakers, and he had developed a liturgy for his children for remembering their baptism. And I said, you know, here I have this little one who had just been baptized. And I was like, David, I need a copy of this liturgy. So I have it. It's, you know, David Reilersdam's celebration of baptism. And so every year on our girls' baptism, we call them their baptism birthday. We have a time after supper. We have cupcakes. So that always makes it exciting. Or lately it's morphed into whatever dessert they want, something special, but there's a candle because this is a birthday. But before we have the cupcakes, we read this liturgy wherein, I mean, it starts, Naomi, when you were baptized on August 31, 2008, God said to you, I love you. You are part of my church. Listen to me. And then the refrain that we have put on Christ, in him we have been baptized, that goes through the whole piece. So we sing that over and over again. And there are questions where, you know, the baptized one states their faith by answering some questions. We say the Apostles' Creed together. And then there's a prayer where we lay hands on our kids. And even, you know, at 16, 14, and 11, we all circle them and lay hands on them. And it's a holy moment as a family. We, before COVID, kind of gotten away from this with COVID, but before COVID, we would always have people from our church come over. Just one family or an individual, because they're baptized into a community, right? This isn't just about their family of origin. It's about their church family. Yeah, that breaks my heart a little bit. I'm in an in-between phase in terms of where our family worships, but their church family history is important. And so we all lay hands on them together and testify, you know, to God's continued faithfulness and love. And I love the line where it says, at the end, we say, O Lord, defend your servant so that she may continue to be yours forever. May she grow in the power of your spirit until she comes to your eternal kingdom. So there is that cord of the present of the past, the present of the present, and the present of the future, all in this liturgy. And then each of them get, and I'm showing this, I know that this is not a visual medium, but I'm holding up a Pandora bracelet with beads. Each year they get a bead representing some aspect of their faith development in that last year. Do they ever wear these? No, but maybe someday they're going to treasure this really expensive little ritual that mommy decided was a good idea. So anyway, it's a special moment. Mm-hmm. So they get two birthdays a year, their regular birthday and their baptism birthday.
That is beautiful. And I love how you're framing it in terms of celebration. Celebrating them as a person, but celebrating them in the context of this covenant God who loves them. It leads me to the other side of things, though, that often our remembering is the celebration, but there is also a remembering of the hard stuff. Yeah. And wondering if you just talk even for a few minutes about how remembering hard things is actually part of spiritual formation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's actually this all began for me. I'm a rememberer partly because I have had difficult things happen in my life. And I mean, we all have, right? But I never want to lose sight of those moments. So I was in my very early 20s, married a year and a half or so. I had just fallen in love with the book, and I have this here next to me as well, Lament for a Son by Nicholas Walterstorff, just because I thought that it was the most real and honest thing I'd ever read about someone's relationship with God in the midst of hard times. And I had just given this book to a dear friend of mine. Like this was very present to me in this moment, just thinking about grief, though I'd never experienced grief myself in any significant way. And my first husband was killed in a car accident just, you know, shortly after studying at Calvin Seminary. And there's a quote from this book, Nick Walterstorff, in talking about the death of his son in a mountain climbing accident, says this. It's on page 63, if anyone has the original or the book. I shall try to keep the wound from healing. In recognition of our living still in the old order of things, I shall try to keep it from healing in solidarity with those who sit beside me on humanity's mourning bench. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, obviously, I've experienced so much healing. Leighton, my first husband's death, was, you know, 22 plus years ago now. And it is not a bleeding wound that I have anymore. I've been married to Tim for over 20 years. We have 3 children. And there's something about the image of holding the wound open in order to not only to honor the person who has died and to honor his family and to honor that part of my story, but also to be in solidarity with others who are sitting on the mourning bench, both for like personal traumas or crises in our lives, but also like national or communal traumas that when we remember difficult things that have happened in our communities, in our nation, in our world, it helps us to be in solidarity with one another. There's something about lament and doing it ritually, traditionally, that binds us together as a community. So our difficult past is not something to shove under the carpet, to run away from. It's something that we carry. It's something that we hold. And so I hold the memory and honor the memory of Leighton's life and death and anticipate his resurrection. My oldest daughter was diagnosed with cancer 6 years after Leighton died in the very same building on the very same day. On December 11, 2000, Leighton died at Butterworth Hospital. On December 11, 2006, our oldest was diagnosed with cancer in that same place. The echoes and the folds of time and remembering those hard things, it's part of holding together as a person, but it's also, again, part of sitting with others in solidarity on the mourning bench or the trauma bench or whatever bench we need to sit on. So yeah, I'm all about that.
Yeah, thank you, Heidi. That I think in our North American Christianity, we tend to avoid the places of suffering. We tend to avoid the places where things don't make sense. And we have a difficulty bringing those things before God in a way that honors the tragedy, honors the brokenness of that we experience in this world. And so I think what you just explained and invited us to glimpse in your life actually helps give some space for others of us and those who are listening to name their story as an act of remembering before God and say, this part has deep pain and I hold it open before God and before God's people. Thank you.
Yeah.
Heidi, so during our time together, you've described a form of remembering that's vulnerable and potentially embarrassing, but super helpful, celebratory, hard. I just appreciate the ways that you've shown us all these different facets of remembering. And one of the things we've been doing with these faith practice podcasts is asking those that we speak to, if you can leave listeners with one small step. So in this case, one way to become more intentional about the faith practice of remembering, what would it be? What would your thought be on that?
Yeah. I think one of, and this is small, you don't have to all of a sudden have 30 years of, you know, journal entries to read to your kids. Like you can't manufacture that. That's something that it's been a gift for our family, but something that you can do and can do immediately, is something that my family started. Oh, I want to say it was pre-COVID. So it was like 4 or 5 years ago. Though, you know, time, I don't know, maybe that was 3 years ago.
What?
I don't know. Yeah. But it was my chair of counsel at that time said that this was a practice they had in their family. And I said, I love that. So we're going to take it on. And that is that saying something around the dinner table every night, each person gets a chance to say something they're thankful for from the day. And that act of remembering just the day, the kind of a prayer of examine that you have around the table of something you're thankful for. And we actually added, or something you're not thankful for, because we don't just, as we've talked about already, we don't just remember the happy parts of our day. And sometimes it's been a really hard day and we just need to honor that at the table together. So we have our thankfulnesses and our unthankfulnesses around the table. And when my kids have friends over, they know this is our practice. And so they come ready with their thankfulness and unthankfulness too. And so those aren't necessarily remembering the big things, but it's remembering the little things. And I want to be thankful that we can do that. You mentioned at the beginning that I work in long-term care now, just 12 hours a week, I'm doing some long-term care work. And not all of my residents, but a lot of the residents have dementia and Alzheimer's. And in some ways, their memories are, they have some vivid recall of things that happened a long time ago that they feel like happened just now. I was walking with a woman down a hallway, and she was from England and was remembering the Aberfan disaster with the coal mine where all these children died, as if it had just happened, and was just overcome with grief. And working with her and her memory and living into her reality, which included a memory from long ago that felt like it had just happened, but also those whose memories are so, so far gone. And that is when I, as I imagine this kind of thing happening to me or those I love, that is when I just rest deeply in the fact that we are remembered by God, right? That is, I mean, if I want to leave our listeners with anything, it is resting in God's memory of us, that God remembers us, remembers, puts us back together, that even though outwardly my beautiful residents may be wasting away, inwardly, God is putting them back together day by day. Mm. And they're remembered and held in God's eternal memory. And that song, when memory fades and recognition falters, it's in our Lift Up Your Hearts. It's so, I hold that with me as I walk and journey with people who never remember my name, even though I see them many times a week. But I remember them. And most importantly, God remembers them and me and you.
Mm, yeah.
Thank you, Heidi. This has been a gift to sit with you for a half an hour or so today and hear your experience of remembering and really I think the note you just ended on, to recall together how God remembers us, putting us together in Christ, and that really being the foundation for our act of remembering as a spiritual practice. So thank you. Thank you for the time today and for the stories you have shared. This has been a gift to all of us.
Thanks, Heidi.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening today. If you are interested in learning more about faith practices and how they can help you grow in love for God and your neighbors, be sure to check out the Faith Practices Project at crcna.org/faithpracticesproject. Connect with us on Facebook and Instagram at CRC Faith Formation, on Twitter at CRC_FFM, or by email at faithformation@crcna.org. You'll find links to all of the above and more in our show notes. Until next time, let's keep practicing.